Well, hey friends, it is so great to see you today. I hope you're all doing well. My name is Clay Munkus, and I get the honor of being the lead pastor here at Next Level. I just want to say welcome to everybody who's watching us today, whether you're here in Charlotte or somewhere else around the country. Hey, we're glad that you're with us. And if you've been watching us for a while, one simple way that you can help us accomplish our mission to raise the reputation of Jesus where we live, work, and play is to just simply subscribe or like the channel that you're watching this on right now. And as always, if you find today's message helpful in any kind of way, I would love it if you would share it with someone and it could be a help to them. Well, today we're beginning a new series entitled The Jesus-Centered Life. And in it, what we're going to be doing is looking at how we can move away from kind of the slogans and church speak language about Jesus and move towards genuinely having Jesus at the center of our life. Not just something we do on Sundays, not some sort of Sunday school answer Jesus, but what are we going to do to experience a life that is full of Jesus? Now, to get here, when I was growing up, there was a phrase that we would use anytime that we didn't want to do something, or when we thought that someone was asking us to do something that was absolutely crazy. We would say, hey, forget you. I don't know how many of you remember that. Anybody out there remember doing that? Man, dudes, forget you. Well, let me give you an example of how this works. Our family has a truly a beautiful, wonderful dog, and her name is Feeny. And we rescued Feeny as a puppy. She's just an absolutely sweetheart of a dog. And if you ever meet her, man, she'll just love on you. But she is also part pit bull, which means she is very strong and can have a pretty scary growl at times. Well, a couple of months ago, my wife and I started to notice this kind of really bad smell while we were sitting in our living room. And at first, I was thinking it was the kids had, like, you know, stuffed some food somewhere, like some old boiled eggs or sardines or something under the couch. It was just awful. And it was so bad. We're going around like, how do we figure this out? What is going on? Through a process of elimination, we discovered that it wasn't really rotten food. It was the dog. And it was so bad that if she touched you, you would have to go change your clothes. I mean, it was really this bad. So my wife did what she does best. She researched the problem, discovered that where it was coming from. And guys, I get it. I know this is gross, but she had infected anal glands. And if that was not bad enough, she discovers that the treatment is to do what they call express them, which is just a polite way of saying pressing on them hard enough that the infection just kind of squirts out. And I know. Just stay with me here. So the next day, I come home, and my wife has this whole station laid out on our kitchen counter. And as I inquire, like, what is this? She proceeds to tell me that what we're going to do is we're going to put the dog up on the counter, and we're going to express these glands ourselves. And as she was explaining my role in this whole process, all I could think of is how the pit bull part of my loving dog is going to come out, and she's going to go all Cujo on us, and all my daughter was going to see when she came home was two dead parents, a lot of blood, and one really upset dog. So I turned to my wife, and I looked lovingly in her eyes. I took her hands into my hands, and I brought her in real close, and I said, forget you. This is the craziest thing I have ever heard you say, right? So that's kind of the idea, right? Forget you. And I know it's a funny way to start out, but there are times when I need to look in the mirror and I need to say to myself, hey, Clay, forget you, because it's not really about you. And I would say that there are times that you need to do the same thing, not look in the mirror and say, hey, Clay, forget you, but remind yourself, hey, it's not really about me, because life is not really about you. It's not about me either. It's about something much, much bigger and much better. The verse that we're going to kind of rally around and sink deep into as we go through this series comes from the book that John wrote in John chapter 3. Now, let me give you a little bit of context before we read the verse, because there's a lot of things that were going on here before John the Baptist says what he says. And before this takes place, Jesus had kind of come to this guy. And his name was John the Baptist. And John the Baptist had been, as you would expect, baptizing hundreds, if not thousands, of people in the Jordan River. And he'd become so popular that large crowds of people were traveling days just to be baptized by John. He had become kind of this really, really important religious figure to the entire region. So one day, Jesus travels to the area, and he asks John to baptize him in the Jordan River. And after the baptism, John declares Jesus is the Messiah. And as Jesus leaves, many of John's followers, they leave and go with Jesus. Well, not too long after this, Jesus gathers some more followers, and they come back to the Jordan River, and they begin baptizing people on the other side of the river from John. And so a debate breaks out between John's disciples, and they're not really that happy that Jesus is kind of stealing their crowds. And so this is where we pick up in John chapter 3, verse 26. It says, "So John's disciples came to him and said, 'Rabbi, the man you met on the other side of the Jordan River, the one you identified as the Messiah, is also baptizing people. And everybody is going to him instead of coming to us.'" So basically they're saying, "Hey, John, hey, Rabbi, you remember that guy that you told us about the other day, the one you baptized? Well, he's back. And they're baptizing people right over there, I mean, just across from us, and everybody is going to him. And we're not really sure what's going on, but this whole thing isn't working anymore. We need to regroup. We need to come up with a new plan because something's going wrong, and we want to know what you're going to do about it." And this is what John says as he begins to reply in verse 27. So John the Baptist, he replies, "No one can receive anything unless God gives it from heaven. You yourselves know how plainly I told you, I am not the Messiah. I am only here to prepare the way for him. Therefore, I am filled with joy at his success." And this next statement that he's going to make is so, so important for us to understand and apply. It really is the center of what we're going to be talking about over the next 4 weeks. He says this after this, okay? "I like his success." Verse 30, "He must become greater and greater, and I must become less and less." He must become greater, and I must become less. This is an easy verse to memorize, but it is a very, very difficult verse to live out. It's almost like John was saying, "Hey, you know what? Second and second place, that's okay. I don't mind this now." And to us, kind of living in the culture that we live in, that sounds crazy because we're taught that second place is what? Second place is first loser, right? We're taught that you got to outwit, outplay, outman, overdo your competition. You got to get an advantage. You have to be number one. But John is saying something very, very different. He tells us that Jesus must become greater, and you and I, we must become less. And we have to be okay with the idea that we're not first. And when you meet someone who truly understands this, it makes them very attractive. Not in how they look, but in that you want to be around them. There's just something attractional about someone who's comfortable in their own skin, who's comfortable with not being number one. The opposite is also true. How do you feel when you get around someone who's always got to get the last word in, who always has to be noticed in that meeting, who always has to have other people looking up to them? If you're like me, you're repelled by them. You don't like being around them. Yet our culture feeds us this. Hey, it's all about you. It feeds us this mindset. Culture says that we are the center of our own universe. It's about what we do. It's about us. It's about my Twitter account. It's about how many people retweeted me or who retweeted me or who liked my post or who liked me on Instagram. It's all about my career because I don't care who I get to step on or who I have to climb over to climb up the corporate ladder. Whoever I need to step on, I will do it because it's about my position and where I'm heading in my career. It's even about my kids. You know, I know my kid. Yeah, I know they're terrible at this sport, but my kid needs to be out there playing, and they need more playing time because it's my kid. Why? Because it's all about me. I don't care about the team. We may lose every game, but put her out there, put him out there, right? Or maybe it kind of shows up in pictures. So let's say there's a group picture and you're in it. What's the first thing that you look at? You look at your picture, right? And if you look like that you're staring off at some weird bird flying through the sky or you got some crooked grin on your face, and it just looks bad, it doesn't matter that everybody else in the picture looks great. If you think you look bad, it's a bad picture, and you delete it off your phone. Why? Well, because it's about us. I do the same thing. It's sad but true. This idea that it's not about us is so countercultural to us. This is why it's so hard for us to apply a verse like this that says, he must become greater and greater, and I must become less and less. But if we're going to mature spiritually, we have to begin practicing this. Our life has to become less and less about us and more about Jesus. Mother Teresa says it this way, and I like what she says. She says, if you are humble, nothing will touch you, neither praise nor disgrace, because you know what you are. So, what does it look like to be more about Jesus and less about ourselves? I think this can look a lot like a lot of different things, but I want to talk about three very specific things that we can all work on. So, how can I become less and Jesus become more? Well, the first thing is I need to lose my focus. I lose my focus. Well, what does that mean? It means to lose the things where you focus on it being about you. Because remember, it's not about you. It's not about us. So I lose my focus on me. In fact, Hebrews chapter 12 says it this way, that we do this by keeping our eyes on Jesus, the champion who initiates and perfects our faith. And when our focus is on him, then it can't be on us, can it? So we lose the focus on ourselves. But honestly, that's very difficult to do. In fact, I'd tell you, I'd be lying if I didn't tell you, when I stand up here and speak, it's awesome to get great feedback. I mean, it is great to hear people mention, you know, what the message has done for them or how it was a real encouragement. You know, we all want to hear good things about what we're doing. And one time I was reminded of this. This was many years ago before I was the lead pastor here. I had just preached the week before. And honestly, I thought, man, I had done a good job. So the next Sunday, I had a couple of people come and find me before service in this auditorium. And this guy shook my hand, and he begins to tell me what an amazing message it was last week and how he loved hearing it. And then the next guy, he was kind of approaching me, was already saying that I had done a great job last week. And then he reached up and he high-fived me. And at this point, if I'm honest with you, my head was starting to get really big. And I was kind of heading across the room, and as I was heading towards where my wife was and where my seat was, and I saw a family coming in, and I got near them, and the guy raised his hand towards me. So I just instinctively thought, well, this is what he's going to do, and I put my hand up to high-five him, but as I got right next to him, he looked at me, and he said, hey, can you get me two seats? And in that awkward moment, God reminded me, hey, the focus is not about you. The focus should be on me. And this verse instantly came to my mind. He must become greater and greater, and I must become less and less. And when we get our focus in the right place, then Jesus can become the center of our lives. But if we continue to focus on what we're doing as the most important thing in the universe and give no thought or action to what God may want to do in our world, the opposite will happen. At least in our minds, we will become greater and greater, and he will become less and less. And I can tell you from personal experience, when that happens, the abundant life, the life everlasting that Jesus promises becomes less and less present in my own life. And what takes its place is more worry and anxiety and guilt. But when I put my focus on Jesus, I experience life to the full, a life that is unexplainable, a peace that is deeper than anything that I know. And all that begins when I get the focus off of me. And then the second way for me to become less and Jesus to become more is this. I lose my stuff. I lose my stuff. And I know this is a tough one. In Ecclesiastes chapter 5, Solomon wrote some really important words. But before I read them to you, I want you to keep in mind, at this time, Solomon was the wealthiest person on the planet. So he is very, very rich. And so this very rich man says this, those who love money will never have enough. How meaningless to think that wealth brings true happiness. The more you have, the more people come to help you spend it. So what good is wealth except to watch it slip through your fingers? Man, and how true this is. Those who love money will never have enough. You ever thought about that? I mean, why is that really true? Because there's always some new thing or some new version of a thing that I need to buy. And I need to buy it because I got to stay up with the trends. And it's just always a little bit better than the one that I've got, right? And there's always something. And it's funny. If I spend too long in any store, I can find so many things that I never knew that I needed, right? It's unbelievable. It's an insatiable desire for more. But when we begin to realize that all this stuff is not really mine anyway, I can begin to experience kind of a strange type of freedom because I don't become so emotionally attached to my stuff. Let me give you an example. Let's say you're in a parking lot and you observe across the way this person opens the car door of their car, and they accidentally ding someone else's car sitting next to them. You're probably thinking, well, man, what a bad day for them. But not really a big deal, right? Because it's not your car. You don't even know the person, so honestly, it's just not that big of a deal. But let's say that you're in that same parking lot, and you're in your brand new car. Let's say you just left the dealership, and it still has the new car smell. And so you park way in the back of the back parking lot away from everybody else. And as you're walking out from the store back to your car, you see someone pull in right next to you. And as they open their door, they accidentally ding your brand new car. What happens? You probably go a little crazy. It's like, what is wrong with that person? I mean, I had two buffer spaces. Why didn't they hold the door? And you start getting really, really emotional. Why? Because that car is yours. You've got some piece of you that's wrapped up in that car. The same thing is true about our day. Let's say we wake up in the morning and you've got a to-do list. And you're thinking, this is my day. I've got all this stuff that I want to do. And today is all about me, man. I'm going to just start knocking things off my list. And then the day begins. And the interruptions to your day start happening. And you're thinking, why are they calling me? Why are they bugging me about this? Can't they do this on their own? And you just start to get annoyed by everyone and everything. Why? Because you thought today was your day. And there's some piece of you that's wrapped up in owning your day. But when your focus is in the right place and you're not in your stuff or your day, when you really begin to live as none of those things are yours anyway, you begin to see these interruptions as opportunities. Opportunities to share God's love, opportunities to listen, opportunities to grow. And if we're going to grow spiritually, we have to learn and we've got to live it out that I don't really have stuff. I don't have things. I don't have my day. Everything I have actually belongs to God. It's not about me. It's more about Him. And as we do that, Jesus becomes more and more the center of my life. Well, the third thing is that ultimately, if I'm going to become less and Jesus more, I lose my life, okay? And I'm not talking about, you know, necessarily actually losing your life. What I'm talking about is what Jesus says here in Matthew chapter 10. If you cling to your life, you will lose it. But if you give up your life for me, you will find it. What Jesus is telling us is that if we try to cling to our stuff and all the things that keep us in the center of our own world, we actually end up losing life. Now, he's not saying that you're going to die. What he's saying is that you never really get to really live. And we all know that there is living, you know, eating, breathing, going to work, making some money, coming home, working around the house, watching some Netflix, occasionally going out to eat with friends. You know, we've all experienced kind of living. And if you're simply living your life, you're probably used to monotony. Life is just a series of going through the motions. Your day have a tendency and they all just kind of blend together, right? But if you're alive in your life, like the life that Jesus is promising, every day feels more exciting than the last. You wake up before your alarm clock because you can't wait for what's in store. You feel like electricity is coursing through your veins on the regular. You feel like you are unstoppable. And what Jesus says is that we have a choice. We can cling to our life and we can lose our lives to being all about the greatest fashion, the latest thing, the newest gizmos, and all that stuff. We can lose our lives to social media, likes and shares. You can lose your life to soccer or college basketball or the NFL. You can lose your life in all sorts of different things. And that's one choice. Or, he says, you can find an alive kind of life through him, where your senses are fully tuned into the moment. Everything is meaningful and harmonious, where you are taking risks and acting even when you're afraid. A life where you're found not one, but dozens of reasons. You find dozens of reasons to get up every single day. But the path to that kind of life is only found through giving up on clinging to the life where we're at the center of everything. If we stay there, not only will Jesus never be the center of our life, we will never experience the rich and full life that he wants for each of us. As we go through this series over the next 4 weeks, my heart's desire for you is that you get on the path to what is really living. I want more than anything else for you to experience what I have found in my own life. And that is what Jesus promised us in the second half of John chapter 10, verse 10, where he says, my purpose is to give them, to give you, a rich and satisfying life. And that rich and satisfying life can only be found when I say, hey, forget you to myself. When I take the focus off of me, when I lose my stuff and surrender everything I have to Jesus, when I give up my own pursuits of life and exchange it for pursuit of Jesus, when I learn that he must become greater and greater, and I must become less and less. Hey, let me pray for you right where you're at. Heavenly Father, I just thank you for your goodness and that your word does not return void. I pray now that you would speak to our hearts about what we can do so that you become greater and greater and I become less and less. Jesus, we pray this in your name. Amen. Well, hey, friends, thanks for joining us today. Could I ask you, if you think today's message might be valuable to someone you know, would you mind sharing this video with them? Not only could it be helpful, but by sharing this content, as well as liking and subscribing to the channel you're watching right now, you are helping us accomplish our mission to raise the reputation of Jesus. And along those lines, if I could, I would ask you, please, head over to our website at nextlevelchurch.org/give and choose one of the giving options that's there. Every dollar that you give, make sure that your church is prepared more than ever to fund our mission to raise the reputation of Jesus where we live, work, and play. Now, by way of benediction, I want to read that verse from John chapter 3, verse 30, to you one more time as we're going to just be wrapping around this as we go through this series. He says, he, being Jesus, must become greater and greater, and I must become less and less. May you this week choose to find your life in Jesus. May he become greater and greater, and may you become less and less as you surrender your desires and your plans to him. May you find the rich and satisfying life that he has promised, and may that life spill out on everyone around you. Hey guys, I want you to have a blessed week. I'm praying you have a blessed week. We'll see you every day this week on Facebook and Instagram. And just know, I'm praying for you. I love you. We'll see you back next week.